"Hello," I said upon answering the phone. "Hello," came Phil's response, which I think was a little bit unimaginative and lazy of him, as he'd merely copied exactly what I just said. But that's just typical Phil. However, there was nothing unimaginative or lazy about what followed. "I've got the perfect opportunity for you," he said. He informed me that the presenter and documentary maker Danny Robbins had tweeted to say that he was looking for musicians in York who know about witches and are available tonight to take part in a BBC documentary. He then stopped talking. I waited for him to continue and explain where I entered into all of this, but he didn't continue, and so I broke the silence. "So how exactly is this the perfect opportunity for me?" I asked. "Because it's a BBC documentary. It's exposure. You need to do it." "Yes, but he wants musicians who are in York tonight. I'm not in York. He wants musicians who know about witches. I don't know anything about witches. I mean, I've read Harry Potter, but that hardly makes me qualified on the subject." But Phil didn't seem to see any of this as a problem. "Well, I've tweeted Danny back to say that you're the perfect man for the job. You need to do this. It's exposure." But hugely embarrassing myself on national radio, spouting up made-up bollocks about witches, wasn't the kind of exposure I'd been aiming for. What Jimmy Savile got 3 weeks ago on ITV was exposure. Not all exposure is positive. At that moment, I received an alert from Twitter, informing me that I had a message. It was Danny Robbins. He wanted to know if I was in York tonight and if he could give me a call to discuss the documentary. Give me a call? But I knew nothing about witches. What the hell had Phil told him about me? He was obviously under the impression that I was the perfect man for the job. I tweeted Danny back, informing him that I wasn't in York tonight. I wished him the best of luck with his documentary and then closed Twitter and thought nothing more about it. Until about 30 seconds later, when curiosity got the better of me, and I decided that I could at least speak to him and find out more. I tweeted him again, saying that actually I might be able to be in York tonight, and he could give me a call if he wanted. The phone rang about a minute later, and it was Danny. I'll gloss over the first minute or so of the conversation, as it was merely the standard exchange of pleasantries. If, however, you are interested in this particular portion of the phone call, then you might want to buy the DVD version of this blog and check out the deleted scenes. After a while, the conversation naturally turned to witches, as so often happens. He informed me that his original plan had fallen through, that he'd lost the musicians he'd originally booked for the show. I made a joke about him and his show being cursed, which was obviously an hilarious comment due to the fact that he was doing a show about witches. He laughed, though frankly not nearly as long nor as hard as he should have done, given the quality of such a joke. I think I detected jealousy in that laugh. He was probably upset that I'd come up with such an amazing joke before he had. It was currently 1-0 to me in the comedy game, and I think he knew it. And it was he who was meant to be the professional. I was feeling a little bit sorry for him. After all, he had just been left in the lurch by some witch-loving musicians. And if you've ever been left in the lurch by some witch-loving musicians, then you'll know that it's not a nice feeling. Plus, I was feeling a bit guilty for joking about his situation. In addition to this, I was starting to get excited at the prospect of taking part in this documentary. "The plan was that we were going to stand on Hobmoor in York," explained Danny. "I'd ask the musicians to play and then maybe chant to summon some evil spirits. They'd also maybe sing a song about witches, and I've got a song that I wanted them to join in with too, called Kill Your Dog for Satan." There was now no way that I was not taking part in this documentary. It was too surreal to deny. I told him not to worry. "I am a folk singer," I bravely informed him. "I know loads of folk songs about witches. I play the accordion. I can get to York in just under 2 hours. He sounded utterly relieved and profusely thanked me for stepping in at such short notice. If only he knew what a giant step that was. If I was going to make it to York in under 2 hours, then I would have to be out of the house in under 15 minutes. But before I could leave the house, I had to find a folk song about witches, because, as I'd mentioned earlier, I didn't know any songs about witches. I know what I'd said to Danny, that I knew loads of folk songs about witches, but I said this because I'd felt sorry for him that he'd been left in the lurch so near to the recording time, and I was getting excited by the prospect of spontaneously taking part in this crazy-sounding documentary, and so I just got a bit carried away. After 10 minutes of frantic Googling, I eventually found something that I thought would work, but I had to be out of the house in 5 minutes. I didn't have time to learn the song now. I would have to learn the words on the train. I saved the words to a memory stick and then shut down my laptop. I put on my shoes and made to leave the house. But then I realised that I had forgotten something vitally important. There was one key ingredient of the song missing that I really could do with knowing if I was going to sing it on the BBC. What about the tune? How did the bloody tune go? I quickly rebooted my laptop. I then did 2 minutes of frantic YouTubing, which is actually much more intensive than 10 minutes of frantic Googling. I had no idea whether the song would even be on YouTube. Fortunately, I managed to find a home recording of someone singing the song. I clicked on it, praying that it would be good enough to give me a semblance of an idea about the tune. After one verse into the song, I heard the sound of the taxi outside beeping its horn. Well, it was presumably the taxi driver beeping the horn, but you know what I mean. This really isn't the time to get pedantic with me. Can't you see I'm stressed? I listened to the second verse, which had exactly the same tune as the first verse. I decided that I would just have to assume that all the verses of the song had the same tune, because I really didn't have time to stick around and listen to all 10 verses. Hang on. 10 verses? How the hell was I going to learn 10 verses in less than an hour? But I didn't have time to worry about that now. I really needed to get into that taxi and to the train station, otherwise I wouldn't make the train, and all of this would be completely academic. I grabbed my phone, loaded the Voice Memos app, and pressed record. As I gathered my coat and bag and made my way down the stairs and out of the house, I hurriedly hummed the tune into my phone. I got into the taxi and headed towards the train station, praying that there wouldn't be too much traffic on the road. The train was due to leave in less than 10 minutes. I couldn't afford to be held up in a traffic jam or by a series of red lights. Fortunately, the curse that had affected Danny Robbins hadn't yet affected me, although I'm sure the witches were holding out, realising that it would be much more fun to watch me standing on Hobmoor, fruitlessly trying to remember the words and tune to an unlearnt song for national radio. The fare came to just over £7, but I didn't have time to wait for the change. I handed the man a £10 note. "Keep the change," I shouted. "Must dash. I've got spirits to evoke." I ran into the train station. I realised that in order to make the train, I would have to make a second financial sacrifice. Normally, I would head to the ticket office before going on the train, because I can save a third on the price of the fare with my rail card. However, they tend not to accept rail cards if you purchase them directly on the train. But needs must. Songs about killing dogs for Satan aren't going to sing themselves. I didn't have time to go to the ticket office. I hardly had time to actually catch the train. But fortunately, I managed to make it with seconds to spare. I reached a seat and sat down. I gave a small sigh of relief. So, I had found a folk song about a witch. I had the lyrics on a memory stick and the tune hummed onto my phone. Now all I had to do was learn the damn thing. But then a thought struck me. I had been so preoccupied with finding a song about witches and getting to the train on time that I'd never even considered what I was going to do after I'd recorded the documentary. By the time I'd finished the recording, I would have missed the last train back to Newcastle. It was already 8 o'clock. Danny had been put up in a hotel by the BBC. Would I end up having to ask Danny Robbins if I could spend the night with him? Perhaps he would think that the only reason I'd agreed to take part in the documentary was because I thought that there might be sex at the end of it. Oh, maybe this is how the witch's curse would manifest itself, with me and Danny Robbins engaging in a mutually undesired act of sexual intercourse with each other. Both of us would probably be too British to say no. Well, I would have to save us both from this tragic fate and find alternative accommodation. I called my friend Ben, who lives in York. He answered the phone with a hello. I reciprocated also with a hello. Normally, I'd be much more creative, but there really wasn't time for that. "I know it's a bit short notice, but can I stay at yours tonight?" I said. Fortunately, the answer from Ben was yes. "Oh, and also, would you like to stand on Hobmoor with me, Danny Robbins, and a witch expert as I sing a folk song that I don't know and haven't learned yet about witches? And before you say no, I'll also be playing my accordion to evoke evil spirits and singing a song about killing dogs for Satan." To which Ben said, "Yes." Well, actually, he sounded completely confused and tried to ask lots of questions, but I told him that I didn't have time to talk further and that that would have to do for now. All I needed was just a yes or a no. We arranged to meet at the train station in 3/4 of an hour. I texted Danny to let him know that I was on the train and that I would be with him soon. I then settled myself down in my seat to learn this folk song. But then another thought struck me. I'd absolutely no idea about the song that I was learning, other than the title of the song and who sang it. It was a folk song, so there was probably a whole story surrounding it. If I was asked to talk about the song, then I would have no idea about where the song came from, what it was about, or anything. I'd made it out to Danny on the phone that I was an aficionado of witch-based folk songs. But how could I learn the song and research the song in less than 40 minutes? I couldn't. For a start, the internet reception on the train would be terrible. I decided that someone else would have to be implicated in this project. And so I called upon the services of fellow young'un Sean Cooney. I tried to explain the situation to Sean as quickly as I possibly could, although this obviously made him immensely confused. But, again, there wasn't time for elaboration. For now, Sean would have to contend with the bare basics. That, in an hour's time, I was singing a folk song about witches that I hadn't learnt yet for BBC Six Music. And could he please do some research for me about the song so that I could digest it ready for the interview? Sean rose to the challenge as only a young'un could, and over the course of my train journey, while I hastily attempted to learn the lyrics, Sean supplied me with text messages containing facts about the song. Due to the paucity of information available about the song, some of it contradictory, I was getting fragmented bits of information coming through. I'd then get another message later telling me that the fact in the last message was not really true, but merely conjecture from people on internet forums. For instance, my frantic Googling back at home had brought up the song called Witch of the West Moorland by the Canadian folk singer Stan Rogers. I then found the song on YouTube, and again, it confirmed that it was by Stan Rogers. But now, I was getting texts from Sean telling me that the song was actually written by the Scottish folk singer Archie Fisher, and appeared to be called Witch of the West Moorlands. However, the song had been covered a number of times by different artists, and the name of the song varied. I decided to sing Witch of the West Moorland, since singing West Moorlands would probably require me to sing in more of a Scottish accent, and I had enough to contend with as it was, without trying to sing the song in a different accent as well. I soon realised that the song, in its entirety, would be far too long for me to sing. It would take over 5 minutes if I sang it all, and I couldn't really imagine them spending over 5 minutes of the documentary just on one song. The documentary was only an hour long. I managed to redact the lyrics in a way that still meant the song made sense by taking out a few of the more incidental verses. Sorry to Archie Fisher, but needs must. I hope you'd understand. To be honest, they'll probably remove even more verses in the editing stage. We are now arriving at York Station, came the announcement. He then reminded us to take all of our personal belongings with us, although I couldn't help feeling that I'd left my sanity behind in Newcastle. The train journey was now over. My head was full of disparate, hastily cobbled together facts about the song, but I had completely failed to learn the words. The challenge had been too much for me. I'd kind of now got the song in my head all jumbled up. I wouldn't be able to sing it properly, certainly not under the pressure of the situation. I decided that I would have to sing the song unaccompanied. Not playing the accordion would free my hands up to read the lyrics from my Braille note-taker. I would have to read the words rather than doing it from memory. This would somewhat undermine my position as witch-based folk song expert, but desperate times called for desperate measures. And anyway, the listeners wouldn't know that I was reading the words. Anyway, perhaps it was for the best that I didn't play the accordion. After all, I hadn't actually ever played the song. Ben and I drove to the address that Danny had given us, which was for the house of witch expert Gavin Baddeley. It turns out that Gavin was actually a genuine witch expert. He'd actually written books about witches and had researched the subject extensively. He also writes about witches and dark magic for newspapers and magazines, and has talked about the subject on radio and television programmes. He hadn't merely hastily learned some facts from Wikipedia, or Wikipedia, which that joke doesn't really work, because it's a play on words, but a written play on words. Wikipedia, of course, I've spelled W-I-C-C-A, as in Wicca. The religion, the witch religion. Yes. So he hadn't merely cobbled together facts 5 minutes before the recording of the documentary. According to his website, Baddeley Baddeley was made an honorary priest by the 20th century's leading Satanist, San Francisco's Black Pope, Anton LaVey. Gavin's house told the story. It was decorated in a Gothic style and was crammed with shelves of books on the subject of witches. He had a black cat called Mort. It was obvious that he was into witches. We also met his wife. This is just an incidental fact and has nothing to do with proving that he was into witches. Although, come to think of it, she was flying around the room on a broomstick and cackling quite a bit. One of the reasons I love radio is because, unlike TV, one man can go out with a digital recorder and make a radio programme. No cameras, no cameramen, no director needed. Just a man and a digital recorder. However, not having the budget and resources afforded by TV also has its downsides. Danny was delighted to see Ben. The reason for this was because he had a car. This was something that Danny didn't have, and so Ben also became an integral part of the arrangement, as we needed to get to Hobmoor, and there wasn't enough room on the broomstick for us all. So in less than 2 hours, Ben and I had saved the day. I had brought the evil spirit-evoking accordion and the witch music, and Ben had brought the transportation. Surely this now means that the BBC owe me a little favour. I await their call. But just as we made to leave for Hobmoor, the rain came down. Ah, of course, the rain. So that was the curse. A bit simplistic and predictable, but nonetheless effective. We couldn't record in the rain because the digital recorder would get wet and it would interfere with the recording. However, it appeared that the rain was a completely natural occurrence and not the result of a witch's curse, because after 10 minutes the rain stopped, allowing us to make our course to Hobmoor. The car journey will also be a feature of the deleted scenes section, but we will skip straight to Hobmoor. Danny asked me to play some haunting music on my accordion, which he would use as a musical backdrop. I find it in these situations a lot easier to actually just make a tune up rather than trying to play a real tune. It also means that I can't really make any mistakes because the tune had never existed before this point. Danny then did an interview with me, asking me questions about the relationship between witches, the supernatural, and folk music. I'd been so focused on learning the song and facts about the song that I'd never even considered that he might ask me broader questions about folk music and witchcraft. Fortunately, I am not completely alien to the concept of blagging, and believe that I have developed some reasonably useful techniques over the years. In fact, I'm thinking of writing a book on the subject, The Blagger's Guide to Blagging. My basic principles for successful blagging include 1. Talking and acting like an expert. Think about the way an expert talks. Take David Attenborough, for instance. Think about how he intonates, inflects. Think about the meter of his voice, the way he picks out certain words and says certain words with more force and intensity. Or Stephen Fry. Think about what he does with his voice that makes people believe that he knows what he's saying. His phrases are deliberate, decisive, precise. He stresses key words and employs a wide vocabulary. So basically, my top tip for blagging is to simply sound like an expert and try not to not sound like an expert. In other words, what do Stephen Fry and David Attenborough not do? They don't do long ums and ers. They don't use indefinite, weak phrases like, let me think, or I'm not sure exactly. My second top tip for successful blagging is to talk very generally about the subject while giving the impression that you're not just talking very generally about the subject. So at one point Danny asked me whether the accordion had existed over 400 years ago, and using these blagging techniques I was able to busk a response. Well, Danny, yes and no. There would have certainly been less complex predecessors of the instrument we see before us today, but these instruments would have been more primitive and lack the sophistication of the modern accordion. In other words, I didn't have a clue, but I assumed that it was reasonably likely that anything they did have would have been more primitive and less complex and sophisticated than what we have today. It's just common sense, but packaged in fancy wrapping paper with a big bow on top. Incidentally, Wikipedia, that's Wikipedia, spelled W-I-K-I, not W-I-C-C-A, not the witch Wikipedia, informs me that the accordion wasn't invented until the 1820s. Though, in my defence, it was apparently a more primitive and less sophisticated instrument than the ones we have today. Danny then asked me to talk a little bit about the song. It was at this point that I realised that what with all the blagging and the accordion playing, the song's tune had completely vanished out of my head. I'd been mentally running through the tune over and over again, but then obviously stopped thinking about it when I was asked to play a haunting tune on my accordion. If it had been a traditional song, then I suppose I could have just perhaps made up the tune. But I could hardly do that with this song. The recording of me hurriedly humming the tune was on my mobile, but I couldn't admit to Danny that I'd forgotten how the tune went. It was bad enough having to read the words, without then having to refresh my memory about the song's tune as well. I therefore went into advanced blagging mode. I apologised and said that I'd forgotten to switch off my phone. We didn't want to ruin the recording with the sound of a phone going off and the sound of phone interference. Danny obviously agreed and stopped the recording while I pretended to switch my phone off. In actuality, this involved me switching my phone on, loading the Voice Memos app, and then discreetly listening to the hummed tune. Obviously, this process was taking a lot longer than turning your phone off would ordinarily take, so I had to pretend that the phone was playing up a bit. And so as I listened to my humming, I tuttered and made comments out loud like, "Oh, bloody phone, come on, just turn off. Oh, it's been acting up a bit of recent." When I was happy I'd got the tune, I switched off my phone and the recording resumed. Fortunately, I sang the song without too many mistakes, and I think I managed to pull off a credible performance. I also accompanied Danny singing his composition Kill Your Dog for Satan, joining in with the chorus with gusto and playing another made-up eerie tune on the accordion. It was a very surreal experience, but immensely fun. I'm interested to know how it'll sound in the context of the documentary. Perhaps I'll listen to it and cringe in horror at the complete bollocks that I'm talking. Or perhaps this will herald the start of a new career, where I become the go-to person for desperate documentary makers. Or perhaps they will just edit me out entirely. You can find out at midnight tonight on BBC Six Music. I'll be back tomorrow with the iPlayer link and maybe some post-programme reflections. The programme is called Desperately Seeking Satan, and apparently is pick of the week in The Guardian, The Radio Times and The Sunday Times. So, what do you think about that, ladies, eh? Impressed, are we? Form an orderly queue. I will obviously be checking for birth certificates, though. You can't be too careful nowadays. Oh, bloody hell, why did I have to go and ruin it at the end? With an awful Frankie Boyle-style joke. There goes my career.